The violence in these streets is nothing new, and just like now, it has always touched too many lives. For some, more intimately than others. He scrubbed his fingers through his hair. It wasn't always guns. Sometimes they had knives and baseball bats, anything they could get their hands on. And sometimes it was just their hands. Anything, even fists, can be deadly weapons. Oh, man. I had a feeling where this story was heading, and I felt sick. Adrian was always in trouble. He dropped out of school when I was a freshman. To be honest, I don't even know what he was doing. We were opposites in a lot of ways, but he always seemed to have money. And I knew enough to know it wasn't coming from anywhere good. Back in the 70s, jobs were already beginning to dry up, and there was little opportunity left behind. He explained. Either way, I remember Adrian being at home on a Wednesday. I remember my mother upset and crying, and I remember our father telling him to leave. Not sure what happened exactly, and my parents never really talked about it. I think they blamed themselves. If they hadn't asked him to leave, he'd still be alive, kind of thing. Carl tipped his head back and sighed. He was killed about a week later. Baseball bat to the head. It wasn't a wrong place or wrong time. We don't know what he was killed over. The police had suspected drugs, but they really hadn't looked into his death too hard. Adrian was just another kid they were scraping off the streets. That's horrible. Did they think that when they were called in for Jaden? I already knew the answer to that. I just didn't want to think it, and that didn't say very good things about me. His dark eyes glinted. Adrian made some bad choices, just like I imagine this young friend of yours had. Doesn't make it any easier to deal with, and that doesn't stop anyone from wondering about what could have been if a life hadn't been wasted. Oh my gosh, I whispered, staring at him. I didn't know. You wouldn't. It's something I haven't had a lot of reasons to talk about. He paused, his expression thoughtful. Or maybe I should have found some reasons. But there had been hints over the years, things he'd said that suddenly made sense. I'm sorry. It was a long time ago, but thank you. He reached over, patting my blanket-covered leg. When Ryder came along, I couldn't help but think of Adrian. He reminded me of him, the carelessness in the way he approached life, as if he just didn't give a damn. I lowered my gaze, hating the truth of those words. I wasn't sure if Ryder gave a damn about himself or not. I used to think he did. And with what happened to that young boy, it really hit home. I let my own experiences get in the way. I don't know about Ryder. Maybe I'm wrong, I hope I am, and according to what Rosa told me, I probably am. My eyes met his, and I knew what he was saying, and I didn't have the heart to tell him it didn't matter anymore. His gaze held mine. I'm going to try. There are going to be times when it seems like I'm not, but I will be. I want you safe and I want you happy. You're smart enough to make good choices. I forgot that. Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Tears stung the backs of my eyes. And there's something else I wanted to tell you. I know I've been on you pretty hard about going to med school. I was wrong about that, too. Rosa said you really wanted to look into social work, and I should have listened when you first brought that up. He said, and I let go of the pillow I was holding on to for dear life. I think it's an admirable path, and with that right there, you proved that you will make smart choices. I see that now. Several seconds passed where I was frozen, and there was nothing but his words repeating over and over. Then something cracked inside me, and it was a good shattering. I sprang forward and wrapped my arms around Carl's shoulders, nearly knocking him off the bed. He caught himself and me, and he hugged me back. For the first time in years, the knot in my throat didn't get stuck. Emotion didn't choke me. The tears didn't fade away. They broke free. Chapter 37. The butterfly was taunting me. I stared at the sketch Ryder had drawn of me the day Jaden had been killed. No, he hadn't been killed. He'd been murdered. There was something about that word that made it hard to think and speak, but I forced myself to label what happened to Jaden correctly. He hadn't died like Marquette from a tragic natural cause. He hadn't been killed in an unexpected car accident. He'd been murdered in a senseless act of violence, like Carl's brother. My gaze drifted to the butterfly soap carving and then back to the sketch. One was complete. One wasn't. Closing my eyes, I turned away as my mind floated back through the long day at school. Ryder had looked a mess in class and had barely murmured hello, and it was like there were a million miles between us. At the end of class, I had thought he was about to say something to me, but he had changed his mind. All he said was goodbye, and then he'd left. Kiera had noticed the difference between us immediately, and it didn't take much for her to figure out that Ryder and I, that we were no more. It might just be what's going on with Jaden and stuff. You're not asking for my advice, obviously, but don't give up, Mallory. Anyone can see you belong together. I knew that Jaden's murder had taken a heavy toll on Ryder, but that wasn't the only thing he was dealing with. What was wrong with Ryder was something that not only ran deep, but was also etched into his bones and ingrained into the fibers of his muscles. I didn't know what could change the way he saw himself, or if anything could. All I knew was that it took years for me to get where I was today, and I still had a lot of work to do. As much as I wanted to hope that change was possible for Ryder, I knew it wouldn't ever happen until he was ready. And he wasn't. We need to talk. My back stiffened as I stood in front of my locker Friday before lunch. Nothing good ever followed when Paige said those words. I had no idea what she thought we had to talk about, but I closed the locker door and faced her as I started to shove my speech text into my bag. I stopped when I saw her. Paige's eyes were puffy and red. Her hair was slicked back in a low ponytail, and the sweats she wore were a size or two too large. She took a deep breath, and her shoulders squared as she stared down at me. "You and I don't really get along, and we only have, like, one thing in common." She stated what she thought was the obvious, but we had more in common than she realized, and maybe that was why there wasn't a hint of animosity in her tone. "And that's Ryder." I tensed. "I don't know what the hell is going on between you two, but I think it's pretty fucked up that you pulled this crap after what happened with Jaden." My mouth dropped open. "I pulled this crap?" A flicker of surprise shot across her face, probably because those four words spoken to her were without a moment of hesitation. She quickly hit it, though. "Don't play stupid. You broke up with Ryder right after he watched his friend, a friend he considered a brother, die." Was I living in an alternate universe? "I didn't break up with Ryder." "Bullshit." She lowered her chin, eyes narrowing. "He was already miserable with what happened to Jaden, and now he's freaking depressed as all hell." Confused beyond belief, I shook my head. "I don't know what Ryder told you, but I didn't break up with him." Paige laughed with derision. "I know you're lying, because the last thing he'd do would be to dump his precious mouse." My brows rose. "God, do you know how often he talked about you over the years? How perfect and kind and sweet and smart you were? To me? You know, the girl he was with until you came back into the picture?" I wondered how rude it would be if I smacked her upside the head with the book I held. "So I know it's bullshit. He would never do it. You did it after coming to the house Sunday and finding us asleep on the couch," she accused. "Nothing happened between us. Not that I wouldn't have been thrilled if something did." My eyes narrowed, and my hands clenched around the book. It was a really thick book. "I knew you would break his heart. He loves you, and if he told you I broke up with him, then he's the one who's lying." Angry, I shoved my book into the bag and yanked the zipper up. "I didn't break up with him because of Sunday, or for any reason, because I didn't do it." "Look, I'm sorry if you believe that. The last thing I'd ever want to do is hurt Ryder, and I didn't." He broke up with me. Disbelief crept into her face as she stared at me. He didn't tell me you broke up with him. I just assumed it was you, since I knew. Or I thought he wouldn't do it. Well, you assumed wrong. I started to walk away because admitting to Ryder's ex that he'd dumped me wasn't exactly brightening my mood. Of course, she stepped in front of me. Why did he end it? Jaw aching, I cast my gaze to the end of the hall. It really wasn't her business, but out of frustration, I spoke the truth. Because he thinks it's better that way, for me, that I can do better than him. That's stupid. Agreed, I muttered. Like, that's super stupid. Paige paused. And you're going to let him believe that? Let him? I tried, but I can't change the way he thinks about himself. You should try harder, she fired back. It's not as simple as that, I told her. You know what he's been through, right? He's told you some stuff. That crap he has in his head is there deep. I can tell him a million times that he deserves the world, but he has to believe that. Not me. Paige blinked. A teacher stepped out of the classroom, frowning when she spotted us by my locker. You two need to get where you're going, which is not this hallway. Paige rolled her eyes as she turned away from the teacher. You need to try harder, she said again, backing away. If you really cared about him, you would. I said nothing as Paige pivoted around and walked in the opposite direction. Try harder? As if it was that simple. It was an absolutely beautiful day, and I didn't know if that was fair or not for a funeral. Part of me thought that the morning shouldn't be so lovely. I wasn't sure if Hector or Mrs. Luna wanted to see the sun shining so bright. Or maybe the gorgeous day helped remind them of the beauty of the world. Maybe some kind of meaning could be attached to the cloudless sky. I didn't know. This was the first funeral I'd ever attended. Ainsley had met me at the Lunas' church, and we'd stood in the foyer for quite some time before the service started. My feet, mainly my toes, were pinched in their black dress shoes, shoes I'd never worn before. I borrowed them from Ainsley since I realized at the last minute I didn't have the right pair to wear with the wool pants and black blouse. I hadn't seen Hector or Ryder, not until the doors opened. The first thing I'd noticed was the chairs, and even though I didn't want to look, my gaze had traveled the wide aisle and the maroon carpet up to the vases and bundles of flowers, to the casket. The casket was open, and I could see just the tip of Jaden's nose and the smooth slope of his forehead. Ainsley and I veered toward the back of the room. I couldn't go closer. I didn't want to see Jaden like that, because I knew that was how I'd forever see him. As people began to file into the pews, I saw Hector and Ryder. They were up at the front. Both were pale. Hector's grandmother was already seated, her back to us, her posture heavy. Ryder was dressed much like Hector, white dress shirt tucked into trousers. I don't know how long I stared at them, but Ryder turned suddenly, and with unnerving accuracy, his gaze collided with mine. I sucked in a sharp breath as we stared at each other from across the room. Neither of us looked away for several moments, and then Hector spoke to him. Ryder turned, and I closed my eyes, exhaling roughly. "Are you going to talk to him?" Ainsley asked in a quiet voice. "No." I twisted my fingers around the strap of my purse. "I mean, if he wants to talk to me, I will, but I don't want to create any drama. No one needs that right now." Ainsley leaned into me. "Do you think it would cause drama?" I shook my head. "I don't know, but I'm not willing to risk it." The room was quickly filling up, and I saw Kiara and Joe sit in pews opposite us. They couldn't see us, and it wasn't like I was going to yell Kiara's name. The service started with a pastor reciting verses from the Bible. And when he began talking about death, my attention roamed to the casket. Lifting my hand, I wiped under my eye with my palm. I didn't understand how this could happen, how someone could kill another person in cold blood, and over what, exactly? A couple $100? The fact that I couldn't comprehend such an act showed, despite my upbringing, how incredibly privileged I was. These were things that I didn't have to worry about, not in the way others did. My gaze moved to where his family sat in the first three rows. Ryder was sitting next to Hector, and I wasn't the only person watching Jaden's brother. So was Ainsley. The moment I saw Hector's face start to crumple, I wanted to get up and hug him. I didn't give good hugs, but I wanted to at that moment because his shoulders shook and he broke. When the service drew to a close, I waited until most of the room had paid their respects before I approached Hector. It didn't seem he saw me as he leaned down for my awkward hug. It was like he was there, but not, and when I spoke to him, he murmured back words I couldn't understand. Saddened, I turned and came face to face with Ryder. I took a step back, startled, and was about to sidestep him when I stopped myself. That wouldn't be the right or the kind thing to do. Ryder didn't speak as I turned back to him. I rose up and wrapped my arms around him. I squeezed tight, putting everything I couldn't say into the act. He didn't hug me back. Maybe I moved away too quickly, maybe I shocked him. Maybe he just didn't want to. I settled back onto my feet and looked up at him. There were a thousand things I could have said to him in that moment. I didn't know why, out of everything I said what I did. Jaden told me once, after the day in the garage, that he looked up to you and Hector. I just thought you should know that was real. The skin around his eyes and mouth tightened. I did something else I didn't really think about. I stretched up once more and kissed his cheek. I felt his sharp inhale, and with one last look at him, I turned. Ainsley was waiting halfway up the aisle. She hadn't come up with me, but her gaze was focused on where Hector stood with his grandmother. "I want to talk to Hector real quick." Ainsley hugged me quickly. "I'll call you later." I hugged her back. "Okay." I didn't see Kiara or Joe in the mass of people as I walked out of the church, and I wasn't sure if what I'd said to Ryder had helped or hurt. The only thing I knew as I walked to my car was that the bright glare of the sun was still there, and the deep blue sky was still spotless and endless. Walking into my room when I got home, my gaze landed on the unfinished butterfly sitting on my desk. As I stared at the half-transformed carving, I thought about everything I had said to Ryder. Everything Paige had said to me, and I knew there was something else I needed to do, something I needed to prove to myself. I grabbed my notebook and pen off the desk and walked over to my bed. It was time to write my speech, and this time I knew what I wanted to say. Chapter 38. I was not going to be sick to my stomach. If I repeated the mantra enough, maybe it would come true. I'd been on the verge of hurling all day Wednesday, but at least I wasn't the only one. Kiara's lunch sat untouched next to mine, her face pale as she read her speech over and over under her breath. The paper rattled in her shaking hands. I took my seat in speech with no memory of how I'd gotten there. As if through a tunnel, I saw Paige come in. She'd been out yesterday, as was Ryder and obviously Hector. I took out my paper and smoothed my hands over it as I focused on taking deep and even breaths so I didn't pass out. There was a good chance I was going to pass out. Just as the tardy bell rang, Ryder strode into class and my heart lurched in my chest. I wasn't expecting him to be here. Oh my word. I was so not expecting him to be here for this. My hands trembled as I dropped them into my lap. Paige's eyes followed him as he headed toward the seat between us. Her smile was sad, and I didn't know if he returned the gesture, but then he sat and looked over at me. He'd shaved, and his clothing wasn't wrinkled. His hair was a mess, though, like always. I hadn't seen him since the funeral on Saturday. I hadn't heard from him, and I couldn't think about that right now. Ryder's gaze trekked over my face.
"Hey."
"Hi," I whispered. His lashes lowered as his shoulders tensed.
"Do you think..." "All right, class," Mr. Santos clapped his hands, cutting us off. "We've got a lot of speeches to get through today, so we need to get started." So, welcome to speech number 3, the person most important to me, one of my favorites of the year. I hope that in writing about someone who's influenced you, you've learned a little something about who you are. And I hope by delivering your speech here today, you'll remember to cherish the person you're telling us about. Because as we were reminded of recently, his gaze flickered briefly to Hector's empty seat. Life can be all too brief. Whatever Ryder was about to say to me faded to the background as Mr. Santos called the first student to the front of the class. Then the next student went up. Then Kiera, who gave her speech, clutching the podium. By that time, I'd scooted to the edge of my seat, prepared to either make a mad dash for the door or fall out of my chair. On her way to her desk, she threw me a thumbs up. I tried to smile, happy that she'd gotten through it. But I was currently doing everything to keep myself from running from the class. Next to me, Ryder was braced on the edge of his seat, his posture a strange mirror of mine. "Leon Washington, the floor is yours," Mr. Santos said. "I'm sure we're all dying to know about the influences that have molded you." I didn't hear a single thing Leon said. People were laughing, though, and Mr. Santos looked like he was considering early retirement, so I wished I'd been able to pay attention. "Mallory Dodge," Mr. Santos called from his perch on the edge of his desk. His eyes were kind as they met mine, as kind as they'd been when I'd come to him at lunch yesterday with my odd request. "You're up." I heard Paige's sharp laugh of surprise. I didn't remember standing, but I saw the shock on Ryder's face as I stepped around my desk. Halfway there, I realized I didn't have my paper, and I had to go back and get it. My face was hot. Someone, a guy, chuckled. He sat in front of Paige. Paige kicked the back of his seat. Perhaps I had passed out and hit my head, because I couldn't believe she'd done that. But no one else laughed, or if they did, I didn't hear them over the sound of the blood rushing in my ears. I made it to the front of the room and turned, standing before the chalkboard and behind the podium. My gaze roamed over the class. Half weren't even looking at me. They were staring into their laps or at their desks, or their eyes were closed. That left the other half, who were definitely looking at me. I glanced at Kiera and she grinned, sticking up her thumb again.
"Anytime you want to start," Mr. Santos said.
Nodding, I tried to swallow. I saw a sea of faces staring back at me. The seal started forming in the back of my throat. Someone coughed. This was horrifying. Tears started to clog my throat. I looked to Mr. Santos for I don't know what. And then I was staring at the class again. Out of all the faces, my gaze landed on Ryder's, and he nodded. I could practically hear his voice in my head. "You can do this." And then it became my voice. He was right. I was right. I could. It would be painful and probably embarrassing. No, not embarrassing, because only I controlled whether or not I was embarrassed. And I could do this. And I wouldn't be embarrassed. Even if I was, just a little. It didn't matter in the big scheme of things. This speech wasn't forever. Being embarrassed was not forever. None of this was forever. But trying was. Living was. My gaze fell to my paper, and the seal slipped down my throat. Some people have one person who's important to them, who's influenced them more than anyone else. Our assignment was to write about that one person. But as I wrote this speech, I realized that I couldn't pick just one. And when my story ends, I hope you'll understand why. But for my story to make sense, I need to start all the way at the beginning. Mouth dry, I didn't look up at the class as I started again with the hardest 3 sentences I'd ever written or had to speak out loud. When I was a little girl, I used to hide in my closet. The space was dust-covered and dark, and it smelled like mothballs. But it was my sanctuary from the monsters outside. When I got older and I would have to hide, I used to fantasize that I lived in a house where the closets trapped all the monsters, and where I would be safe in my bed. That I lived in a house with parents I could look up to and admire,
and one day they would become the subjects of a speech I wrote about how they changed my life for the better. I didn't live in that kind of house. But the monsters I hid from shaped who I've become by teaching me that kindness and love are things that should be given freely. They taught me who I never want to be. That's why they're important to me today. Two people adopted me when I was almost 13. They didn't see a frightened child who didn't speak. They saw a daughter. Their daughter. They dedicated every spare moment to erasing the bad memories and beating back the nightmares. They opened up doors that had never been available to me before, and believed in me. They proved that love and kindness can be given freely and without expectation. They taught me to trust and that I no longer need to be afraid. When I was homeschooled, I met a girl who had never had a problem speaking or meeting new people. At first, I was envious of her openness and friendliness. Meeting people and making friends was something I wasn't good at. We were polar opposites, and I never expected that one day she would become my best friend. She proved that you can find your best friend when you least expect it. And recently, she has influenced me by not taking what I have for granted. The really tough parts were coming up, so I took a brief pause and inhaled slowly before continuing. Just a few months ago, I met a boy who was kind to me, even though he didn't know me. He always had a smile and charm to spare. I didn't know this boy well, but his influence is possibly one of the greatest, because he has taught me to take nothing for granted, but most important, to have a smile for a stranger. He offered kindness when I needed it most, and I hope to do the same for others. The last important person in my life has been there since I can remember. He lived in the house where the monsters roamed the hall. He kept me safe when they got too close. He read to me when I was too scared to sleep. Because of him and all that he sacrificed to make sure I was safe, I'm able to get up every morning in my own bed. Because of him, I have a second chance at life. Stopping, I took another deep breath and glanced up, half expecting most of the class to be asleep. Some were. Only a few. The rest of the class stared, their faces a blur. I saw Paige. Shock was etched into her pretty face. I saw Ryder and he. His lips were parted and he was sitting rigidly in his seat, his arms limp at his sides. I forced myself to continue. But the reason why he is important to me is that he proved that helping those who need it, even if they think they don't want help, was worth the risk. He has shaped who I am today because he was the first person to recognize that I had a voice worth listening to. Some people have one person who influenced them more than anyone else. I learned while writing this speech how glad I am to have many, that it's a series of people and events that shape who you become. I learned that even monsters could have a positive impact. I learned that there are people out there that will open their homes and hearts for nothing in return. I learned that strangers could be tolerant and kind. I learned that those who are always helping others help themselves last. Most important, because of all of them, I learned that I could do what I thought was impossible. That I can stand here today. The room was quiet, and I wasn't sure if that was a good or bad thing. Mr. Santos cleared his throat.
Thank you, Mallory.
Gazes followed me as I walked back to my seat. Kiera looked like she was seconds away from crying as she shot me a huge grin. Even Paige stared as I sat. I looked over at Ryder. His face held the same expression he'd worn the entire time he sat through my speech, knowing what no one else other than maybe Paige realized, that it was about him. He looked thunderstruck. And I could have floated right up to the ceiling. I'd done it. Pressing my lips together to hide a stupid smile, I faced the front of the class. I'd done it. Holy crap, I'd really gotten up in front of the class and given a speech. I'd stumbled over words, and there had been a lot of awkward pauses. But I'd done it.
Tears, the good kind of tears, burned the back of my throat. I wanted to dance and shout. It took everything I had to sit there through Laura Kay's speech without jumping out of my seat and screaming. Mr. Santos called on me when the bell rang. I dared a quick peek in Ryder's direction as I gathered up my stuff and walked to the front of the class. Mr. Santos smiled as he clamped his hand on my shoulder.
You did really good, Mallory.
My heart was pounding. I did. He nodded.
I just want to let you know that I know how hard that was for you, especially with such personal subject matter. I'm proud of you.
I swallowed hard. Thank you.
Now, I expect you to be up here for every speech, he said. Do you think you can handle that?
Could I? I didn't know, but I did know I would try. I nodded.
Good.
He patted my shoulder.
Have a good evening.
I murmured something along the lines of, you too, as I turned around. Ryder was already gone, and despite everything that had gone down between us, that surprised me. A lot. I thought he would have hung around to congratulate me because he, of all people, knew what a big deal this was. But he was nowhere in sight. Walking out of the class, I told myself I wasn't going to let his disappearance burst my happy bubble of accomplishment. It sucked that he wasn't there, but what I'd done today was more important, and I knew just how I wanted to celebrate it. As soon as I got home from school that day, I went straight up to my room and dropped my bag on the floor by my bed. I opened the drawer on my desk, pulling out the supplies. I picked up the half-complete butterfly and took it over to the window seat. Sitting down, I finally finished the carving. It was fully transformed, with delicate wings spanning out on either side of its small body. I'd even added a tiny smile below the indents for eyes. I placed it back on my desk, just below the last sketch Ryder had done of me, and then picked up my history text. I had an exam to study for.
Mallory? Carl called. Can you come downstairs?
Shoving the index card into my history text to mark my spot, I flipped the book closed and scooted off the bed. My sock-covered feet hit the floor. It was too early for dinner that night, so I had no idea why I was being summoned. I tucked a loose strand of hair back behind my ear as I went down the steps. Carl was standing just inside the living room. Rosa was standing beside him, but my gaze was glued to what he held in his hands. It was a small rectangular package wrapped in brown paper. My steps slowed. What is that?
It's for you.
He held out the package. I stared at it for a moment before reaching out to take it. Why? Rosa leaned into Carl.
It's not from us, honey.
Oh. I turned the light package over. There was no writing on it, and the brown paper reminded me of a shopping bag. Who's it from?
Why don't you just open the package?
Carl advised. Huh, good idea. I slipped my finger under the edges and peeled off the tape. The paper came right off, and the moment I saw what was underneath, my heart leaped into my throat. It was a copy of The Velveteen Rabbit. Not the old copy Ryder used to read to me, but a shiny new one, a blue hardcover edition with the rabbit standing up on a small grassy mound. The brown packaging slipped from my fingers and fell noiselessly to the floor. There was a piece of paper sticking out of the pages. With trembling hands, I carefully opened the book. The thin slip of paper was nothing more than a torn sheet of notebook paper, but a large section of print was highlighted in blue. "What is real?" the Velveteen Rabbit asked the Skin Horse one day. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you are made, said the Skin Horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real.
Does it hurt?
Asked the Velveteen Rabbit.
Sometimes, said the Skin Horse, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt.
It doesn't happen all at once, said the Skin Horse. You become.
It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to people who break easily or have sharp edges or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in your joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always. Ryder had drawn a line from the last sentence to the margin, where he had written, "It lasts for forever."
"Oh my God,"
I whispered hoarsely. Squeezing my eyes shut, I held the book to my chest. Those highlighted lines were everything. They summed up how I felt, how I'd changed. None of it had happened all at once, but once it happened, it couldn't be undone. And it happened because I was loved, by Carl and Rosa, by Ainsley and even Ryder. But most important, by myself. Carl cleared his throat.
"I think you should open the door."
My eyes flew open and my gaze shot to them.
"What?"
Rosa nodded at the door with a small curl of her lips.
"Go on, honey."
I stood there for a moment, and then I whirled around. Racing to the door, I turned the handle and yanked it open. My breath caught. Ryder was on the stoop, and he turned slowly. He was wearing what he had in class earlier today. His hands were shoved into the pockets of his jeans. He wore an actual sweater for once, a thick wool one in navy blue. His gaze roamed over my face and then to the book I still held to my chest.
"I'm real." Those two words, "I'm real." No one else might have gotten the significance of them, but I knew they meant the world.
Tears clouded my eyes as I stepped back and to the side, holding the door open for him. Relief flickered over his face and he walked in. I closed the door, unable to speak, and not for the typical reasons.
"Keep the door open up there,"
Carl advised, and then he pivoted on his heel and walked into the kitchen. Rosa smiled at us. Looking at me, Ryder waited, and I nodded. He followed me up the stairs to my bedroom. I left the door open, sort of. There was at least a 1-inch gap between the door and its frame. Ryder went to the window seat and he sat. His weary gaze followed me. I walked to the side of the bed facing him and sat on the corner. A tired smile pulled at his lips.
"I don't know where to start," he said.
"Anywhere," I whispered, clutching the book as hope and wariness warred inside me. He lowered his chin.
"I guess I'll start with the speech. That was..."
It was beautiful. The words, what you said, what you meant. But the fact that you got up there and did it was the most beautiful of all those things. I mean it, Mallory.
"Thank you,"
I whispered.
I wanted to talk to you before class, but I'm glad I heard that speech first, because I knew you were right before. But now I know it even more.
I took two breaths.
"You were right about what you said about me. About how I see myself and others, you were right. I don't give other people a chance to give up on me. I never really thought of it that way before. But you were right."
He dropped his forearms to his knees.
"It's weird. You know, what you said to me at the funeral about Jaden and that being real. God, I could only say this to you because you understand. But I didn't feel real. In some ways, I still don't."
"I do understand." I held the book tighter. "I totally do." His lashes lifted and his eyes pierced mine.
"I know. Both of us were that damn rabbit."
He laughed roughly.
"I was sitting in that funeral on Saturday and I was thinking about everything, thinking about how fucking unfair it was that Jaden was in that damn casket, and something hit me right then. I've been living like I didn't have anything, no family, no opportunities, no one who really cared if I was here or not. And I was looking at Jaden, sitting next to his brother and his grandmother, and I..."
His voice cut, and my chest squeezed.
"Jaden had a family. He had opportunity, you know? He had plenty of people who cared about him being here, and yet He still ended up dead in the damn streets.
Ryder shoved his hand through his hair.
And I'm here. I'm so damn lucky because I haven't been careful. Henry could have easily killed me.
I sucked in a sharp breath. He was so right there. Many times I thought Henry was going to beat him to death.
When Henry's friends would come after me, I used to think I did something, you know, that it was somehow my fault.
What? That wasn't your fault, Ryder. None of that was.
I know. But sometimes my head gets... it gets messed up.
He paused.
And when I was in that group home, I didn't care. I got in older, bigger kids' faces. I got the shit knocked out of me multiple times, and I didn't care. By the time Mrs. Luna came along, it felt too late for me. She tried. She really did, still does, and I've done so many stupid things that should have ended my life.
I hated hearing that. It scared me to death.
Jaden makes one or two bad mistakes, and he's dead.
Me?
I'm still here.
He dropped his head back and sighed.
I'd been given opportunities others hadn't, and I've been wasting them, and now I have to really wonder if it is too late.
It's not, I whispered, truly believing it.
His throat worked on a swallow.
After the funeral, I went home and I picked up that book. I started reading it, don't even know why, but I got to that part and I...
God, it hit me, you know? The truth of those damn words the skin horse spoke. Being real could hurt. Being loved could hurt. That's what...
what living is all about, and the opposite is unimaginable.
Lowering the book to my lap, I smoothed my palm over the hard, glossy surface as I thought about the skin horse's words. They could be interpreted in so many ways. To me, they were all about letting go of the fear of being imperfect, accepting that it was okay to be wanted and needed and loved, to be heard and seen. Ryder and I were a lot like the little boy and the rabbit who wanted to be real. Both of us spent so long relying on only each other. We'd been tossed aside, unwanted, and we wanted nothing more than to be cherished, treasured, and loved. We wanted to feel real. Both of us were afraid of the opposite. To some, the opposite was death, but to me, to us, it was being stuck forever, never changing, never seeing ourselves or others around us differently.
I do, he continued, voice gruff, I do care. I don't want to be like this forever.
My gaze rose to his.
I broke up with you because I thought it would be better that way. That you would eventually find someone who has their shit together, who has a future and isn't stuck. Things were... are messed up in my head. I'm trying, really trying to change that.
I stilled.
I know you may never forgive me for hurting you. I can understand that. I can also understand if you don't want to have to deal with me while I'm trying to do better, be better, but I want to be the person I think you deserve.
Oh my.
I want to be the guy with the future, with his shit together and who has hope.
He admitted, scooting toward the edge of the window seat. His gaze met mine and those beautiful eyes carried a sheen that tore through my heart.
I want to be the guy worthy of your love. And I swear, if you'll have me, I'll do everything in my power to be that man. I'll never stop trying. Ever.
Oh, my, my.
And I want you to know that I heard what you said in that speech, Ryder said, his voice scratchy. I might have saved you all those years ago, but now you've saved me.
My heart stuttered and then sped up. I reacted without thought. Placing the book on the bed, I launched myself at Ryder, just as he came off the window seat. We collided. I folded my arms around him as we went down onto the floor, me partially in his lap, and his arms tight around my waist, his face burrowed against my neck. I felt a tremor run through his body, and then he shook in my arms. I held him tighter as he broke into pieces, and years of holding it together shattered. I held him through it all. Then it was me who put Ryder back together.
Epilogue. The remote was right there, taunting me from where it rested on the thick cushion of the ottoman,
next to the tray that held two glasses and a bowl of barely touched pretzels. All I would have to do was sit up a little and stretch. I could grab it, and I wouldn't have to watch any more of this basketball game. Sitting up and stretching wasn't exactly doable at that moment, though. A heavy arm was curled around my waist, and if I moved too much, I'd wake Ryder, and that was the last thing I wanted to do, especially when he'd been so exhausted the last couple of days. The shadows deepening under his eyes every day the last 2 weeks worried me. He'd been pulling a lot of hours at the garage on a custom paint job he'd finished up on Thursday. After school yesterday, I'd gotten to check it out, and like every design of Ryder's, it had been amazing. Mind-blowing. I still had no idea how he could take paint and spray it on any surface, designing something so amazing and intricate. This custom job had been on a car the owner raced at one of the tracks near Frederick. On the hood, Ryder had painted a dragon, complete with detailed green and purple scales. Reddish-orange flames erupted from the dragon's gaping mouth and crawled along the front side panels. I'd snapped a picture of it with a real camera to add to Ryder's ever-expanding portfolio of work. Like before, he had acted weird about it, as if he still didn't know how to process recognizing his own talent. I still had no idea how he didn't see that, but he was getting better at it. Like so many other things, like me, it was a work in progress. Ryder had told me a few weeks ago that sometimes he opened up the photo book we'd picked up together at the craft store and just flipped through the pictures of his work. His cheeks had been bright red when he'd admitted it. I thought the reaction had been adorable. Sometimes we sat and looked at his art together, and he blushed then, too. But the custom job wasn't what had Ryder worn out to the point that he'd fallen asleep the minute his head had hit the throw pillow on the couch. This morning had been a big deal for him. He'd used up every spare moment of the last several weeks preparing for the SATs he'd taken this morning. A smile inched across my face. Studying for the exam wasn't something he'd ever thought he'd do. His taking the exam had probably shocked the entire school administration into stunned silence. Well, except for Mr. Santos. A goal was scored, and the crowd on the TV cheered. Or was it a point? A basket? I really had no idea. Why couldn't I have telekinetic powers? Moving things with my mind would be awesome. Glancing down at where Ryder's hand was lying on my lower stomach, I welcomed the dipping sensation. The fluttering feeling that occurred every so often with Ryder wasn't something that faded with time. I didn't think it was ever going to. Blue paint was smudged along the inside of his middle finger. He never seemed to get all the paint off his fingers. I tilted my head back and looked to my right. The fluttering turned into a thousand butterflies bouncing between my ribs as my gaze coasted over Ryder's striking face. Feeling a little like a creeper, I continued to check him out. A lock of dark brown hair, the color of coffee, fell across his forehead. Thick lashes, much darker than his hair, fanned his cheeks. His full lips were slightly parted. It seemed strange now that there was a point in my life, a point that lasted for several years, where I sincerely believed I'd never see Ryder again. When lying like this, in his arms, was a fantasy I hadn't even allowed myself to dream about. Now it was a reality. Life was weird. "If you take a picture, it'll last longer," he murmured. My eyes widened as heat poured into my cheeks. "What?" Lashes lifted slowly, revealing eyes that seemed to be neither completely brown nor green. "The picture will last longer than you staring. Then you can have a picture to cuddle with at night, when I'm not with you. You can hold it close, squeeze it tight." I rolled my eyes as my lips twitched into a grin. "Whatever." "Uh-huh." Lifting his arm, he stretched it above his head as he yawned.
"When are Carl and Rosa getting here?"
I glanced at the pale gray wall clock. "Probably in an hour."
"Good thing I'm awake instead of drooling on you as they walk through the door."
"Yes," I said seriously, "good point." Ryder smirked, but
But joking aside, neither Rosa nor Carl would be thrilled to come home and find us snuggled together on the couch. It wasn't like they expected Ryder and me not to get, well, close to one another, but they were still adjusting to my relationship with Ryder. It was another work in progress, and they were coming along. They were trying, and that was so much better than their being afraid of what they originally believed Ryder symbolized. Plus, it helped that Ryder was becoming more serious about his future, and studying for the SATs had helped endear him a little to goal-oriented Carl. Winning him over completely was harder, but I could tell Carl was beginning to respect him. He was starting to see him as more than a boy with no future who was going to lead me down the wrong path like the Pied Piper of hotness. But their walking in on us all wrapped up together probably wasn't going to help matters. I started to sit up. Ryder's arm tightened around my waist, and he rolled slightly, shifting me under him. My hands lifted to his shoulders, and when I looked up, my heart stuttered at the sight of his half-grin. "Where are you going?" he asked. "Up." My fingers closed, gathering the material of his shirt. "Carl will kick you out of the house if he finds us like this, and you don't even want to know what Rosa will do."
"True."
He dipped his head, running his nose over mine.
"Rosa still scares me."
I giggled. "You think that's funny, but she really does." Tipping his head to the side, he kissed my cheek. "I'm convinced she knows how to deliver as much damage as possible with a single punch. She's a doctor. She knows things." Laughing again, I tried to picture Rosa punching anything and failed. I patted his shoulder. "You'll be okay."
"I might need you to protect me."
He kissed my other cheek again. The corners of my lips curved up. I can do that. This time his lips brushed my temple.
"Sorry about falling asleep as soon as I got here. We haven't been able to spend a lot of time together, and the first time we do and I'm not studying or working on a car, I sleep on you."
I kind of liked him sleeping on me. "It's okay. You've been working hard. How do you think you did?" Ryder lifted his head.
"I think I did pretty good. Only a few questions really threw me."
Thrilled to hear that, I smiled. "Are you excited?"
"I guess, I mean..."
He trailed off, brows knitting.
"There's still a lot that's got to fall into place. I have until June to get the form in for financial aid, but it's going to be hard getting in with my grades this late in the game. I'd have to have blown the SATs out of the water."
"But you have spring. If you don't get into the fall semester, it's not over," I reasoned. "Before you know it, you'll be at College Park with me, studying visual arts."
"You're right."
A wicked little grin tugged at his lips.
"I think we should celebrate."
Pausing, he waggled his brows at me.
"We have 50 minutes now. I only need, like, 5 of them."
"Oh, my God," I laughed, shoving at his shoulders. "You're terrible."
"I'm not terrible."
His eyes met mine, and the flutter was back, deeper and more dizzying.
"I'm in love."
Oh, gosh. My heart swelled like a balloon, and all I could do was stare at him for several seconds before I managed to whisper, "I love you, too."
"I know."
Ryder lowered his mouth to mine, and the kiss scattered my thoughts. I was still shocked that a kiss had that kind of power, that when his tongue touched mine, I could forget everything in the world. The kiss ended all too soon. Ryder shifted off me and sat up, lifting my legs so they were in his lap, and I sort of lay there, arms lax at my sides as I stared at him. A goofy smile split my lips, and I didn't care. I was thinking about how we could utilize the remaining 50 minutes.
"How are things with Dr. Taft?"
he asked, as he shifted his legs, spreading them a little. "I didn't get the chance to ask you yesterday." "Huh." I started to frown. I was over here thinking about getting back to kissing and other stuff, really nice stuff. And he just mentioned my therapist's name? Ryder smacked my leg lightly and chuckled.
"Focus."
I narrowed my eyes at him,
but focusing was hard when my body felt like I'd been out lying in the sun.
It was good. We talked about how I was feeling and how I was handling stress.
I'd started seeing Dr. Taft once every 2 weeks again, mainly because I felt like I needed someone who wasn't a part of everyday life to just talk things out, because I still had work on myself to do. It had been really depressing at first, because it had been 2 years since I'd spent time in his office. Like I'd somehow gone back into the past instead of progressing forward. But Taft drilled something into my head that was so important, something I'd already known, but really needed to understand. The past never went away, and it was not designed to do so. It would always be there, and it should be acknowledged. Dr. Taft insisted that attempting to erase the past would only lead to a crisis in the future. And he was right. My past could not be surgically cut out of me. It couldn't be removed from Ryder. What happened to Jaden couldn't be forgotten. My past was a part of me, and it molded who I was today. But it was not the sum of who I was to become. It did not control me. Ryder leaned over and found my hand. He threaded his fingers through mine and squeezed.
I don't want to lose you.
Pressure clamped down on my chest, and I squeezed his hand back. I thought with Jaden dying, it had Ryder on his toes. Having mortality smack you in the face would do that.
You won't.
Good. Ryder smiled as he tugged me up into a sitting position. His other hand cupped my cheek, and he kissed me once more, sweet and soft. He pulled back just enough so that his warm breath danced along my lips.
I think I want to kiss you again.
I'm more than okay with that, I told him, and I smiled. Truthfully, I was okay with myself. I wasn't 100%, and that was okay, because I was a work in progress. There were moments when things felt too much, like the other day when I had to stand up and deliver another speech. There were other situations, especially when I thought about the fact that I'd be in college in less than a year, or when I found my mind wandering to Jaden. Death was frightening and overwhelming. Sometimes when I thought about what Ainsley was facing in the future, I stressed out for her. I still had a lot of work to do, and that was my work to complete, and it was my voice that needed to be heard when I needed to speak. No one else. It was me who had to carry myself over the finish line, and all I needed to remember when I felt like not trying was that that feeling wouldn't last forever. Forever. I used to believe it didn't exist. One word had terrified me as a child and haunted me. But now I knew, in many small ways, that it was real. But it didn't scare me anymore. Forever wasn't the little girl cowering in the closet. Forever wasn't the shadow sitting in the back of the class. Forever wasn't doing what I thought Carl and Rosa wanted instead of what I needed to do with my life. Forever wasn't believing I was some kind of replacement daughter, and that I was letting them down. Forever wasn't being the one who needed protection. Forever wasn't pain and grief. Forever wasn't a problem. Forever was my heartbeat, and it was the hope tomorrow held. Forever was the glistening silver lining of every dark cloud, no matter how heavy and thick it was. Forever was knowing moments of weakness didn't equate to an eternity of them. Forever was knowing that I was strong. Forever was Carl and Rosa, Ainsley and Kiera, Hector and Ryder. Jaden would always be a part of my forever. Forever was the fire-breathing dragon inside me that had shed the fear like a snake shedding skin. Forever was simply a promise of more. Forever was a work in progress. And I couldn't wait. For forever. This is Amy Landon. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Problem with Forever by Jennifer L. Armentrout.
This program was produced by DN Audio Services. Executive producer, Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2016 by Jennifer L. Armentrout. Production copyright 2016 by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used under license with Harlequin Books, S.A.